Shmuley, Alana, and I go back 20 years.
Very nice. All right. So good evening, everyone. I welcomed everyone already. And before I turn it over tonight's class over to Rabbi Shmuley, Merv would like to make an announcement. Merv, just unmute and it's all yours.
Yeah, I'd like to say this. On this very night, November 9th, there was Kristallnacht in Germany. On that night, over 30,000 Jews were rounded up, and you know what happened. They were beat up, their houses were destroyed, they destroyed synagogues, they went into smashed Torahs, beat up children. That was that night. And what was important about that was it wasn't by the Nazis. It was by anti-Semitic rioters backed up by the Nazis. That's very significant. Because what you see is the real flesh and blood of anti-Semitism. And this spread right to the Sudetenland, right to Germany, right to the Sudetenland. Now you see, that brings us back to today, why it's important for us, for Canadians, to look at this issue. Anti-Semitism is increasing all around the world. And believe you should know that it's really increasing in Canada. Look at downtown Calgary 6 months ago. Look at downtown Montreal, which is our largest city of Jewish people. Do you know what happened there? Now, guess what happened in Toronto? In Toronto, on University Avenue, there were riots. There were Palestinian high school and university students, politicians, talking and screaming at each other in downtown Toronto. Now that's very significant. I want to say why. You see, here, the struggle is being taken up by high school and university students. So important because they don't have the complacency, nor have they been assimilated like older Jewish people like us. They are struggling to assert their identity as Jews politically, and therefore in every other way. Now, Rabbi Heschel and I have talked about this a lot. What is a Jew and what is a good Jew? A good Jew, as we all know, like Shabbos candles, Rosh Hashanah, raises his children, probably in a Jewish home, and so on. A Jew can be anybody. And be anybody at all. Someone who's assimilated, or somebody who's a crook. He's still a Jew. So the point is, what can we as people our age and so on do to fight this assimilation and anti-Semitism to avoid another Kristallnacht? I would suggest to you that it's the parents' role to educate your children about Kristallnacht before and after. Before and what's happening today in Canada. How do we do that? One thing is to tell them. Hey, child, tonight was Kristallnacht. And in the morning, I'm going to explain to you what it is, what it was, and what happened in Toronto and in Canada. And I want you to know, even though you're in Hebrew school, you have to understand this. As your children growing up, getting older, who are our future, 100%. It's just like the young kids and so on arguing for climate change. It's going to affect the children. We are already assimilated. We may eat kosher food, but that's what we have to do. So please take this message.
Very good. Merv, thank you. Beautifully said. Thank you so much for sharing that. And now, without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Rabbi Shmuley.
Thank you very much. Merv, that was a powerful message. If I can share something just before we open the floor up here. You reminded me of a video that I was sent that I just watched. It's a video of a shul, one of the shuls in Germany. It's called the Brunnenstrasse Shul in Berlin. It was, as you mentioned, many thousands of shuls were destroyed in Germany and surrounding areas, but not this one. So 83 years later, it now houses a cheder. And this video was sent to me from Rabbi Mendel at JEP, at the corner of Shelburne and Bathurst. And I just want to share it with you to see. He speaks about what the line that's famous in last week's Parsha, that where maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later, where Yaakov comes and takes the brachot that Yitzchak intended originally for Esav, but rightfully should go to Yaakov, and we can discuss that. But Yaakov has to deceive his father to get those brachot, and he dresses in the clothing of Esav, and he puts like goat hair on his arms so that he feels like Esav. And his father says famously, this line is well known, Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, v'hayadayim yaday Esav, but the hands are the hands of Esav. And we could see that. They could try the Dayim Yaday Esav. They can try to knock us down. But the Kol Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, is going to continue. And Rabbi Heshy, if I can share my screen. I can share this video.
Sorry, I was on mute. Let me make you co-host. So I think you need to do that. So co-host. Okay. I'm going to mute.
Okay, great. Very short clip. This was taken Erev Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So just a few days ago. Actually, let me redo this because I can optimize it here. Here we go. Just make sure my sound is on properly. So that's the cheder singing Hallel on Rosh Chodesh.
Where is that?
Slave. They were in this shul called the Brunnenstrasse Shul in Berlin. A shul that it's for sure over 83 years old. It was standing when the night of Kristallnacht, and it continues as we can see. It's beautiful. It's been redone. But it's a shul that's still standing. Not only is it still standing, it's not a museum like many shuls unfortunately are in Europe today. It's a vibrant shul with a cheder. And they were singing, Kos Yeshua Sessa, I'll raise a glass. Ubeshem Hashem Ekra, and I'll call out in the name of Hashem. So that's a pretty powerful. Also, I could share the video on the chat if people want. You can forward it.
Rabbi, what was the name of that shul again?
Let me just see that if I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's called the Brunnenstrasse Shul.
Brunnenstrasse. Is it in East Berlin or West Berlin?
I do not know.
Oh.
I wish I would have looked into it more before. I watched it a few minutes before this talk, and Merv, your words inspired me to show it. I think it's a very powerful message of Am Yisrael Chai. Okay, so on that note, you know what? I wasn't sure if I was doing an Ask the Rabbi or a Chumash here. So we can do an Ask the Rabbi, we could do a Chumash here, we could do a little bit of both, whatever you want. So maybe we can open the floor and see who wants to ask a question or share an idea, and see what our time is like, and maybe we can end with an idea from last week's parsha that I would have shared. L'chaim to all of you who have a drink in your hand. It's just tea. L'chaim, here's tea bag. Proof. How does this usually work? Do people just throw out questions?
Oh, I thought you were going to give a class first.
Oh, I could do that. That's what I said. I didn't know what we were doing.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought you were going to do your regular.
I saw you posted on the chat, Ask the Rabbi. So I thought, okay, we're Ask the Rabbi tonight.
Sunday on Tuesday.
Sorry? Sunday on Tuesday. Exactly. Okay, good. We'll do it. We'll do it that way. I'll give my class first. Maybe that will raise questions, and then we can go in whatever direction it goes in. Usually, I see the crowd here. I realize I should give my class on Tuesdays. That's what it is. thank God I get a good crowd out on Sunday. But what a nice crowd here today. So usually, what I do on Sundays is talk about the previous week's parsha a little bit in depth. We get about five psukim in, five sentences in, because it's just so rich and we have so many discussions that, and it's good. It allows me to save material for next year and the year after that.
Okay. I was going to say that actually I charge extra to be here on Tuesdays.
Very good. Here's where the pastries are and the tea. That's
what there you go. Okay. So I'm going to mute. Okay.
Okay. You're welcome to stay, Rabbi Heshy. I'm not.
I'm staying. I'm just muting my.
Oh, okay. Okay. Let me find my psukim here. Where did I put it? Okay. So the idea that I wanted to share today, or to focus on. Sorry. Let me fix that. I wanted to talk about the relationship of Yaakov and Esav, and specifically, it seems very confusing that what is this business that Yaakov takes the brachot that should have been Esav's? I mean, Esav's the firstborn. Yitzchak wants to bless his son, and here comes Yaakov, really on his mother Rivka's encouragement, and takes these brachot from him, seemingly takes brachot that should rightfully be Esav. I mean, what right did Yaakov have to take these blessings? So I want to look at I want to start at the beginning, where of their birth and the first two stories about Yaakov and Esav, to really examine who was Yaakov, who was Esav. To look at, go into it a little bit and just see what the text has to say. And maybe it'll give us a clearer picture of what's going on. And then we're welcome to fight it out after. Okay. So the last week's parsha begins, Ve'ela toldot Yitzchak ben Avram. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham holid et Yitzchak. Avraham begot. His child was Yitzchak. It's interesting that the first pasuk repeats it. It's twice it says that Avram was Yitzchak's father. But we can get into that another time. Then it says, Vayihi Yitzchak ben Arbaim Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old. Bekachto et Rivka bat Betuel ha-Arami. When he took Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, the Aramean, Miparan Arama chot Lavan ha-Arami lo li'isha. She was Lavan's sister. Yitzchak took her as a wife, and we discussed that the week before. That was the whole episode of the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka. Vayatar Yitzchak LaHashem, and Yitzchak prayed to Hashem, Lenochach Ishto, opposite his wife. The picture the Medrash gives us is that they would stand on the roof of their home, and Yitzchak would be in one corner, and Rivka would be in the other corner, and they were both praying to Hashem, Ki Akarahi, because Rivka was barren. She couldn't have children. And we spoke about previously that really the entire existence of the Jewish people is completely miraculous, twofold. One is Sarah, the first matriarch of the Jewish people, could not conceive a child. And then Rivka could not conceive a child. And later Rachel cannot conceive. And there's many great women in the Jewish history that could not conceive a child. So that's miracle number one, that Sarah had a child at such an old age, at 90 years old, that she could have Yitzchak. But miracle number two, as we saw in the Psukim previously, that Sarah could not physically have a child. She was lacking the parts that a woman that's required to have a child. It was not physically possible for her to have a child. So it was not just that she was barren. It was not physically possible for her to have a child. And yet, miraculously, she had Yitzchak. And that's a message to us that the Jewish people are, just like the video that we just watched, we do not exist on a natural plane. By the laws of nature, the Jewish people should not exist. And yet, the Jewish people do exist. And not only do we, as we just said many times and people have said in COVID, not only did I survive, I thrived. The Jewish people are not just surviving our history, we're thriving. But Rivka is barren. She cannot have a child. But then the pasuk says, Vayeter lo Hashem. Hashem answered Yitzchak's tefillah. Vatar Rivka Ishto, and his wife became pregnant. His wife conceived. And the commentaries discuss both Yitzchak and Rivka are praying, and yet Yitzchak's prayers are answered. There's a reason for that, but we're not going to get into it right now. But again, Rivka's barren, and it seems by the natural course, she should not have a child, yet Hashem answers Yitzchak's tefillah, and she becomes pregnant. But then it's a very interesting pregnancy. Vayitzrotzitzu habanim bekirba. The children are struggling within her. Vatomer, but she doesn't know at this point that they're twins. She just feels that there's this struggle going on inside her. And she says, Vatomer im kein lamazeh anochi. She says, if this is the case, why am I like this? Why am I in existence? What do I need this for, I guess? The commentaries say that what was happening was that when she would pass the yeshiva of Shem and Ever, so she would pass a Torah, a place of Torah, and the baby would kick as if excited, they wanted to get out. Then she would pass a place of Avodah Zarah and the baby would kick. So she would say, what does this child want? Does he want to serve God or does he want to serve Avodah Zarah? Right? So she said, what do I need this for? But Telech Lidrosh et Hashem. She went to inquire of God, which means she went to Shem, to the yeshiva, and asked him, he was a Navi, to ask him, what's going on? Vayomer Hashem la, and Hashem told her, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. There are two nations in your womb. It's not one child. It's two children, and really each of those children will become a nation in itself. Ushnei le'umim, there are two kingdoms, mima'ech, in your innards. In other words, they're both going to be great, but they're very different. Ula'om mila'om yamatz, one kingdom will become mightier than the other kingdom, V'rav Yavot Sayid, and the elder one will serve the younger one. You can stop me at any time if you have any questions, by the way. Otherwise, I'll just keep going. Vayimlu Yameha Laledet, and her days filled to give birth. Vihine Tomi Vivitna, and in fact, there were twins in her womb. Vayetze Harishon, the first one came out, Admoni, he was ruddy, it translated. He was of a red complexion. Kulu Ka'adam Deret Seir, he was covered in hair. Vayikru Shemo Esav, they named him Esav. Similar to this language of, I guess, hairy. Achiv, and then his brother came out. His hand was holding on to the heel of his older brother Esav. Vayikra Shema Yaakov, and they called him, he called him Yaakov. This phraseology is important because it comes up later. Yaakov is holding on to Esav's heel, and they called him Yaakov because of that. Yaakov meaning meaning heel, or a reference to holding on to the heel. And Yitzchak is ben shishim shana beledet otam. So Yitzchak is 60 years old when he gave birth, when Rivka gave birth. So Rivka has, they've been married and haven't had children for 20 years until this point, when they have the twins. So the twins, when born, appear to be very different physically, right? They see it even describes their physical appearance right from day one is different. They were described as spiritually different, and their destiny is going to be different, although each one is going to be great in its own way, in his own way. But then also they're physically different. And then the pasuk goes on and says, Vayigdalu hana'arim, the children grew up. Vayihi Esav ish yodei tzayid, ish sadeh. Esav was a guy who knew how to hunt. He knew how to trap. He was a man of the field. He was a streets kind of guy, right? He had street smarts. The Yaakov Ishtam, Yaakov's a simple guy, innocent, it translates it as here. You can go into a whole bunch of different ideas on what Tam means here. We talk about Tam at the Seder, right? That there's the four different children. One of them is the Tam, what we translate as simple. Here they're translating as innocent. I once heard a Rebbe of mine say that that the Jewish people in Europe had a Muna Pshuta, simple faith. So sometimes we think of simple faith that they were simple people. They weren't very learned. They just believed. They were told there was a God. They believed there was a God. That's it. No. He said simple faith means it was so simple to them. It was so obvious God's existence. It was just simple, right? So it doesn't mean that you're not learned. It's just. Sometimes we tend to complicate things when it could be right in front of your face. So he said to them, the Jew in Europe, it was just obvious that God existed. So Ish Tam, exactly what that means, it's likely not saying that Yaakov was a simple guy, simple as like uneducated, because the next words are Yoshev Ohalim. He dwelled in tents, which the commentaries explain means that he sat and learned. Exactly what he learned is a different question, but he seemed to be the bookworm, right? Esav's the street smarts guy, Yaakov's the bookworm. Vayav Yitzchak et Esav, kitzayid befiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because he would... because his game was in his mouth, as it translates here. His trappings were in his mouth. So simply, he would give Esav good food. But that doesn't seem to be the but we know who Yitzchak was. He was he's one of the forefathers. Was it just simply that if you spoke to his stomach, then he liked you? It seems like probably something else is going on here. Rivka hevet et Yaakov. It doesn't go into any detail. It just says simply Rivka loved Yaakov. So until this point, the two brothers seem very simple. Like, I mean, they seem very different. Looks, personality, and destiny. But it doesn't talk anything about ethics, right? What were they like ethically? Were they good people? Were they? So it hasn't specified yet, right? But now there's an episode that happens that starts to give us a look into their character. Vayazed Yaakov Nezid. Yaakov was cooking a pottage. I don't even know what a pottage is. I understood a soup. He was cooking a lentil soup. Rashi says, why is he cooking? What the Torah is just telling us that he's making he was making lunch one day. No, what happened was his grandfather Avraham had passed away that day, and he made a soup that represented mourning, a lentil soup because it's round. The lentils are round, and that's one of the symbols. Today we have eggs, symbols of mourning. Either that it has no opening, it's just circular. It's just you can't tell. Sorry, give me one second. Can't tell where the opening is. So the same thing, a person who's just suffered a tremendous loss, they're mute, they're silent, there's nothing to say, both for them and then for us. In fact, the halacha is you shouldn't really say anything. If the person hasn't even buried his loved one yet, you're gonna start saying, I'm sorry, and like, there's nothing to say, right? They haven't processed anything yet. So, or the other reason is that just like the life and death, and then reborn, and Tchiyat HaMetim we believe in, and reincarnation, that the dead will be reborn when Mashiach comes. So there's a circle going on. So that's what eggs or the lentils represent. So Avram has passed away. Yaakov is cooking this lentils. He's in mourning. Vayavo Esav minasada vehu ayef. And Esav comes from the field and he is faint. He's starving. He's exhausted. So first off, where's Esav coming from? Like, they're in mourning. Their grandfather passed away, right? And Esav is not sitting in mourning. He's coming from the field, exhausted and starving. So at this point, we need Rashi. Rashi always fills in what the context is going on here, and it's very rarely from his own words. Sorry, what's he exhausted from? Beretzicha, from killing. He was out murdering that day. As the pasuk in Yirmiyah says, ki eifa nafshi lahargim, my soul is faint before the murderers. So Esav was out murdering. Whether take Rashi at face value of what he was doing, or just wondering why is Esav. Like, generally when someone passed away, we're mourning, we're not out doing stuff, right? Where's he coming from? Something seems off. By Yomer Esav al Yaakov, and Esav says to Yaakov, Halitenina min hadom hadom hazeh, pour into my mouth some of that red stuff. Ki ayef anochi, because I'm exhausted and starving. Al kein karashmo Edom. So Esav has a second name, therefore his name was Edom. So now Yaakov says something very interesting to him. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov says to him, Michra kayom et bircho ratchali. You want the some of the soup? Sell me today, as of this day, your birthright. There's a certain right that a firstborn has in Jewish law. He says, I'll do a trade. You give me your birthright, I'll give you some of the soup you want. So this is the point where people think, oh, Yaakov's taking advantage of Esav. He's in a weak situation. He's exhausted. He's tired. He's not thinking straight. Yaakov was looking for a vulnerable moment. Let me take something of his that's really like beyond the value of what the item is. And now he's swindled Esav. Shosh. If I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Hi, Shoshana. My name's Shoshana. You can call me Shosh. Hi. What does it mean to sell your birthright? What does that mean?
It's a good question. It seems that the birthright is going to come with some benefits. The benefit being the first blessing from Yitzchak, and we'll see later on that that Esav really wants that blessing, and Yaakov takes it. So
he buys it. He sells.
Yaakov is saying, if you want the birthright. I mean, if you want some of the soup, give me the birthright. That just seems to be at very face value.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, something more going on here. I would suggest that there's something much more going on here. That we were introduced to the two characters by their destiny, right? That they're each going to be great, and they're going to be kingdoms and nations, and this birthright is tied into that. That it's going to affect their destiny, right?
I still find it a strange thing that they sold a birthright, like that it was something that was to trade or to
barter.
Yeah,
there's also a concept in Jewish law that the eldest gets a double portion. I guess that it has some monetary value. That he could be saying, give me, so now I'll end up with a double portion and you'll end up of whatever the inheritance is,
right,
and a regular portion.
Mm, interesting.
But I think that there's something much more going on here.
Right.
Cash. Mm-hmm. Right. And Esav realizes that afterwards as well. Michael.
Hi, thank you. Isn't this really the beginning of the story that ends up with Yitzchak giving Yaakov the blessings instead of to Esav? Aren't they directly
exactly
connected?
That's what I'm arguing, that this is we have to really understand the beginning of the story to understand what's going on. Taking the blessings,
yeah, and really it's essentially conferring upon Yaakov the lineage of what is the Jewish people. Isn't, I mean, it's This is how big this transition is.
Right.
And just as a last point, it's interesting that Esav replies, what do I care about that? I'm just hungry.
Exactly.
That's an important thing to keep in mind.
Exactly.
What it meant to Yaakov rather than what it meant to Esav, a man of the field.
The truth is the common, thank you for that. And the commentaries say that really it was supposed to be Yaakov in partnership with Esav that would continue the Jewish people. But as we saw, they're both going to be great. And they each have different talents, right? Children can be very different. Even the 12 tribes each have their own flag. So you have Yaakov's 12 children that they're each very unique, flag representing their unique identities. Right, that's why countries have their own flags. Everyone has their own identity, their own nationality. Well, I guess they're all Jewish people. At the end of the day, they're all contributing in a different way to the strength of the Jewish people. So Yaakov and Esav were supposed to do it in tandem. But at this point is where the juncture happens, that that Yaakov realizes this cannot, this it's the Jewish people cannot continue through Esav. I need the birthright, meaning I need, it's going to be on my shoulders. And in fact, we see Yaakov taking on Esav's personality as the story goes on, taking on those qualities. I think Stephanie and then Vic.
What was he out killing that he was so tired, that he came back so exhausted and so tired? What was he out killing?
It doesn't specify what he was out killing, but murdering, so it must have been people. He wasn't hunting. Right, the Torah is making a reference to it, and in fact, the Rashi right beforehand says that Avram died at this point really earlier than he was supposed to die, but Hashem didn't want Avram to see in his lifetime the type of person that Esav would turn into. So, so Avram died a little younger than he was meant to, so to speak. Exactly what means I don't completely understand, but we see the type of person that Esav's already turning into, even the day or the days after his grandfather's funeral, how he's acting.
Thank you, Shmuley.
No problem. Vic, go ahead.
Rabbi, I really relate to this parsha. I actually read it on Shabbat, but I didn't relate to it like I did do today, because between about 30 and 33 years ago, my wife and I were trying to have children, and for about 3 years, we couldn't have children, and we had done some crazy things. She had three friends in Israel, she's from Israel, who got pregnant first shot by an infertility expert in Israel, and her mother's religious, and when she got to Israel, her mother said, "What are you doing? Go to New York and go to the Rebbe and get a blessing."
Right.
So anyway, she had a try at doing it and it didn't work. So we came to New York and we stood in a line of 3 hours of about 3,000 people. Yeah. And he gave us each a dollar. And soon after, she had twins, just like this story.
Unbelievable.
And actually, what's interesting is our own Yaakov from our group, from the Chai Center, started this meeting saying, "I don't believe in luck." At the time, I thought I was very unlucky. And now I realize that maybe it was something special.
Wow.
Because they're twin daughters, and they really are special now. So it's like, and it was, you know, soon after, you know, I don't know if that's odd or it's God, that we went to the Rebbe and it worked.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I guess I prayed like these forefathers.
Yeah,
we both did.
Amazing. Wow.
Anyway, so that's my
wow. Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
Rachel or Jake? I'm not sure who had the question.
It's Jake. Thank you, Rabbi. fascinating undercurrent here.
Mm-hmm.
Story. I'm almost thinking there seems to be like a power, not just a struggle, but perhaps Yaakov is trying to somehow stop or control the murderous aspect, the power that Esav has as well. So in a sense, you know, I'm saying sort of, you're going out murdering people you shouldn't be, mm-hmm. you know, that may be part of the mm-hmm. undercurrent here. Just a thought that I had in terms of the undercurrent of what's happening here. So Another take on what's happening, I guess. Thanks.
Maybe he was murdering animals, not humans.
We don't usually refer to murdering animals.
Oh.
Like, I mean, because we could eat them. So we don't refer to the killing of an animal as murder. Refer to the killing of a human being as murder. I mean, some would refer to the killing of a human being, as, I mean, of an animal as murder, but that's, we as Jewish people, we believe that we were given permission to eat animals, right? Although Adam was a vegetarian, and it's only because Noah saved the animals that he was given permission to eat them. It's only from Noah on. But Jake, to your point, it's really interesting. You're making me think that at the end of the story, Yaakov, Esav's coming to kill Yaakov, and then they hug and they make up. There is an idea also from Vic from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I'm sure others say it as well, that Yaakov had the was the one who had the power to tame Esav in some way. And they do sort of unite at the end there. But Esav does not really turn around. It's not successful, right? So, but that could be a whole study in itself. So we're at this point where Yaakov is saying, okay, so give, so yeah, Esav, sell me the Bechor. And you could think, okay, maybe he's in a vulnerable moment. And he's swindled Esav. So let's see the next pasuk, or the next two psukim rather. Vayomer Esav. So what does Esav respond? Hine anechi holech lamut. I'm going to die anyways. V'lama zelia b'chora. What do I need the blessing for? So at this point, you could think Esav just knows that it's a monetary thing. So he's going to die anyways. You can't take your money with you. So what do I need it for? But I think we'll see later on that Esav knows it's not just a money thing. Right, but then the next. So then Yaakov says, "Vayomer Yaakov, Ishavali." Okay, so swear to me. Swearing was very, very important back in the day. We see this in many cultures. And Avi Melech asks Avram to swear to him. Earlier, he asks Yitzchak to swear to him. So it wasn't just amongst Jews this idea of swearing, but taking an oath, I hear it actually. Many times at funerals, unfortunately, but you hear that they were a person of their word. If they said something, that was like gold, right? So that's what a person would be known for. So here, if you gave your word that I'm yes, I agree, you didn't need anything more. So Yaakov says, swear to me. Vayishavalo, Esav swears, vayimkor et bechoro Yaakov. He sells his blessing to Yaakov, his birthright rather. Yaakov natan le'esav lechem. Yaakov gives Esav bread, unizid, and this porridge or whatever, the soup, adashim. Now it describes it as this lentil soup. Vayochal, he eats. Vayesht, he drinks. Esav eats, drinks. Vayakam, vayela, he gets up and he goes. And the Torah comments and says, Esav despised the birthright. Because this is the point after he's eaten and drunk and satiated that he could say, hey, wait a second. This is a ripoff. And negotiate back with Yaakov. But he doesn't do that. He just goes. Now, there's not another word from Esav. And I think this moment is very poignant, right? This is the point when Esav just walks away from the birthright. And that's when the story ends. And then it goes on to a whole nother narrative until the fifth Aliyah. We're skipping a couple chapters. The last two psukim of the chapters before the episode of getting the blessing of the blessings say, "Vayihi Esav ben arbaim shana." Esav was 40 years old. "Vayikach isha et Yehudit." He takes a woman. Her name is Yehudit. bat be'eri hachiti, ve'at basmas bat elon hachiti. So what's Esav doing here? He figures, well, my father married at 40. I should marry at 40. It's the right thing to do. So I'll marry at the same age as my father. But who are these two women? The pasuk says, "Vatiyena morat ruach leYitzchak uRivka." These two women were a vexation of the spirit. Love the English. Vexation of the spirit of Yitzchak and Rivka. They despised the fact that these two women were in their house. What was wrong with them? They were worshipers of Avodah Zarah. And they would be burning all sorts of incense to these idols. Right in, we're talking about Yitzchak and Rivka's house, right? There's no mention of Esav. So Esav marries like his father at age 40, but Yitzchak married Rivka. And we saw what the personality that Rivka was like and why Yitzchak married her. These two women are not anything like his mother. And not only that, for all the respect that he seems to give Yitzchak and Rivka, they're both can't stand that what these women are doing in their home, like their actions in their home. And then the pasuk that begins the blessing says, "Vayhi ki zaken Yitzchak," when Yitzchak was old, "Vatichena einav meraot," and his eyes were too dim to see. So Rashi gives two comments on what it means his eyes were too, like what caused him to lose his eyesight. And it's either the pasuk just beforehand, which seems to be the simple explanation, that the women were, why were they such a bother to Yitzchak and Rivka? Because they were burning this incense in the house. This incense caused Yitzchak to lose his eyesight. But Rashi gives another explanation, that it was the tears that the angels cried when Avram was about to sacrifice Isaac that landed in his eyes, and those spiritual tears caused him to lose his eyesight. I think really the two answers are two sides of the same coin. Isaac is the guy who was almost sacrificed on Mount Moriah, right? The famous Akedat Yitzchak. We argued for that, or I argued rather, that he's not, he doesn't seem to really be of this world after that. He's like on a different spiritual plane, right? The same person is having a woman worshiping idols in his own home. So whether he's blind because of the tears of angels or blind because of the incense of the idol worship, his eyes cannot handle either one, right? If he's already had the tears of the angels in his eyes, how could the same eyes handle the smoke of idol worship? Right. So he calls Esav and he says to him, I'm old, and I don't know the day that I'm going to die, and now Sana Kelecha. Sorry, I'm just going a little bit quicker because I see the time. Go sharpen your implements, Vikashta, and your bow, Vatsei Hasada, Vatsuda Litsayed. Go do what you do best. Hunt me what I like to eat and make it the way that I like it. And then my soul will bless you. Verivka Shamat. Rivka hears what Yitzchak tells Esav. And when Esav leaves, Vayelech Esav Lasada Latsud Sayed, Rivka says to Yaakov, Hine Shamati, I heard what your father told Esav, and here's what I want you to do. Heveta Lit Sayed, sorry, she's repeating what Yitzchak said. So she says, now, my son, listen to my voice and what I'm going to command you. Lech Na Elatzon, go to the sheep. Kacha Misham Shtei Gideizim, go take two goats. Rashi comments that goat has the same taste as deer. Anyone know if that's true? I've never had venison, so I don't know. But supposedly, goat is the same taste as deer, and so therefore Yitzchak will not taste the difference. and he'll think that it was a hunting, even though
Rav Shmuley, sorry, sorry to interrupt. It's Yaakov. I've tasted both.
Hi.
And goat does not taste like deer.
Deer
has a very distinct aftertaste that is unlike goat. Just giving you my personal experience.
I thought deer wasn't kosher.
Deer's kosher. All I have is to go on what Rashi says. Go take goats. Shtei gide izim. Kasher ahev ki tamagdi ketamatzvi. The taste of a kid goat is like the taste of a deer. Have you had kid goat? Maybe kid goat tastes different. Right? Veal doesn't taste like cow. So maybe it was a kid goat.
I'm not quite sure. It was many, many years ago. And to be honest with you, I wasn't kosher back then. So I'm not sure. But I do know that I've had goat and I've had deer, and they do not taste the same.
I don't know.
Maybe it wasn't kid goat, and maybe it's my my sense of taste. So I'm not arguing with Rashi. Chas v'shalom.
I'm just kidding around. It could be that also that the goats of the kid goats of Israel taste different than the I don't know where you had it, but I don't know. Somehow Yitzchok was fooled. Anyhow, Rivka says to Yaakov, take these kid goats. Your father will think that it's the hunting. And also, I want you to take Batikach Rivka at Big Day Esav. She takes Esav's clothing. He had a coat that actually Rashi comments, what's this coat? He stole it from, he murdered someone who had taken it from Nimrod. It was by Nimrod, the guy who threw Abraham into the fiery furnace. It was his coat. And whose coat was it beforehand? It was actually Adam Harishon's coat. So this was a very valuable, famous coat that Esav had gotten, and he had kept it with his mother. It says, Asher Ita Babayit, it was kept with Rivka. Why was it kept with Rivka when he had two wives in the same house? Why didn't he keep it with his wives? He didn't trust his wives. That's what Rashi says. He knew who his wives were, right? But they're still in the house, and he's still married to them. And he's got this coat by murdering people. And Yaakov's wearing the coat. And also she takes hides of the kid, of the kid goats, and wraps his hands in it. And he takes the meal to his father. And this is where the conversation happens, where Yaakov, Yitzchak says, who is this? He's really not sure why, because you can if you go through the psukim, you can see that the language of Yitzchak is very different than, I'm sorry, of Yaakov is very different than the language or the tone of Esav. The words are, he keeps mentioning God's name. He keeps saying, please, my father, please this, please that. Esav, when he comes in, says, father, get up, right? He had tremendous respect for his father. It's the fact that Medrash says that no one had respect for a parent like Esav had, but he had a certain gruffness about him. Yitzchak is confused. He says, as we said, Hakol Kol Yaakov. At the end, he says the voice is the voice of Yaakov. He sounds like Yaakov, like Yadayim Yedei Esav, but the hands, and he feels even his neck, feels like Esav. But at the end, he does not recognize him, and he says, and he gives him the blessing. And the blessing is, we should mention the blessing because we talked about why, what's it worth? Hashem should give you from the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth an abundance of grain and wine. Nations shall serve you, kingdoms shall bow to you, and you shall be a master over your brothers, and your mother's sons shall bow down to you. And I think this is key. Who's going to be the leader? the blessing is the one who receives this blessing is going to be the leader. And even afterwards, when Esav as well gets a leader, Yitzchak can say about him is when your brother's down, if he's not acting properly, then you will be able to overcome him. But as long as your brother, referring to Yaakov, is doing what he's supposed to be doing, you will always serve him. You'll always be under him. And we, in fact, see that throughout history. So there's something, a destiny going on here. Esav says at the end, my brother grabbed my heel again. In other words, he was able to catch on and grab something that I and take something from me. But we can see from this whole entire episode that Esav knows what he's giving up. And yet he still just walks away from it and doesn't ever try to challenge Yaakov and get it back. Okay, sorry, I went totally over time.
All right. Any questions, by the way? Any other questions? Okay, Rabbi Shmuley, I want to thank you so much once again. Hopefully everybody enjoyed. We look forward to seeing you back tomorrow night on, tomorrow's Wednesday. Brian, where are you? Where's Brian? There he is. Brian, tomorrow's Wednesday.
Actually, Sandy has a question.
Sandy has a question. Sandy, you're on mute.
How come the mother didn't intervene at some point, seeing that she was able to see?
What do you mean?
Well, he gave the blessing to the other son, and I sort of feel the mother was present during this blessing at some point, so how come she couldn't intervene and say something?
Michael looks like he desperately wants to respond.
Okay.
Thank you. This is for me, it was one of the most problematic psukim in the whole Torah, because it seems that Rivka and Yaakov are very much deceiving and misleading Yitzchak, you know, which seems very disrespectful and dishonest and whatever. And I think it was Heshed that explained to me that Rivka was given a prophecy by Hashem right at the beginning of this pasuk, where Hashem says to her, two nations are in your womb. The elder shall serve the younger. So it's essentially, it's God's will. And, you know, when I look at it that way, it's God saying that this is the way that this has to happen. And in that way, so Rivka knows that this is how it has to play out. So she's essentially, I hesitate to say it, but she's Jacob's co-conspirator in this whole thing. Rather than stopping him, she's going to make it happen because God told her that this is the way that it has to happen. I want to thank Heshi for that, because I struggled with this for a long time, you know, because it's problematic.
I got it.
Not only did she not intervene, she actually encouraged it, right? It was her brainchild. Yeah. But I forgot, if you'll permit me, I know we're 3 minutes over time, but I completely forgot a clinching point, if you'll let me share it. At the end, when Yitzchak realizes what happens, because it's almost like a revolving door. As Yaakov is walking out, having received the blessing, Esav walks in. And you can just imagine the drama of that moment where Esav walks in and says, Father, get up, have some of the food that I prepared for you, and then you can bless me. And Yitzchak says to him, Mi ata, who are you? I thought I was just talking to you. Who are you? Vayomer ani bincha b'chorcha Esav. I'm your son, your firstborn, Esav. Vayacharad Yitzchak harada gedola ad ma'od. This is a very powerful sentence here. And Yitzchak shuddered, a great shudder, Vayomer, and he said, Mi Efa hu hatsayid sad sayid. Who hunted game and brought it to me? If it's not, wasn't you, who was it? Vayave liva acho mikol baterem tavo va varchehu. And I ate, and before you came, I gave him the blessing. Look at what Esav, look at what Yitzchak ends with. Gam baruchia. He too shall be blessed. Yitzchak ends with the comment that you would think that he's like, oh my gosh, what did I do? But he doesn't end that way. He says, it should go as I said. He should be blessed. In other words, at that moment, Yitzchak realizes that, you know, he doesn't know that Rivka caused it, but he realizes this is the way it was meant to be. That Yaakov is the one that's supposed to get the blessing, and Esav is very distraught. But it's not like he couldn't have saved it beforehand. He had plenty of opportunity. This is years later. He had plenty of opportunity. But so Rivka was the one who instigated Yaakov to do what he did and encouraged Yaakov to do it. And Yitzchak as well realizes, you know what, I was maybe rooting for the wrong guy all these years. I mean, the commentaries say he was hoping that Esav would turn around and become and reach the potential that he was supposed to achieve. But at this moment, he realized it's not going to happen. And Yaakov is the one that's supposed to get it. And Yitzchak in the end affirms the blessing went to the right guy. And I can't really help you out, Esav.
So much to learn just from that story. Amazing. On so many different levels, there are so many lessons. There's so much to learn in that. It's fascinating. Really is mind-blowing.
Thank you. Yeah, 100%. And we just scratched the surface, I think. The sentences at face value.
Yep. Anyway, once again, thank you all for joining. Looking forward to seeing you back tomorrow night. And Rabbi Shmuley, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good night, everyone.
Great meeting.
Good night.
Thanks. Great meeting.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.